Thank you.
As my notes blow away.
I'm so pleased to be here with you this morning. We have been part of Sanctuary for about 2.5 years now. Although I say I still feel kind of new because I work a lot of weekends, and so I'm not here a lot of the time. So I know I'm always a little surprised we've been here this long, but this has been a wonderful home for our family. My husband Nathan is up here. My kids will come to the 11 o'clock, but we have six kids. We have three adult children who are also our biological children. One is in Chicago, one is in Connecticut, and one is still in college in Michigan, but not that one, so it's okay. And then we have three kids at home who joined our family through adoption. So we have Noah. When my youngest biological child was 11, we adopted Noah, who was 9. And we adopted him from China. And then the next year, we adopted Ethan and Anna, also from China. They did not know each other. That's always our number one question. They met on their adoption day, but they were 8 and 6 when we adopted them. So we doubled our family in 15 months, which was quite an adventure. And I have promised them that I will not talk about them beyond what I just said. So what we're going to do this morning is talk a little bit more about how our family got there. But what I want to do is widen this lens a little bit. As the team, we were talking about, oh, this will be International Adoption Sunday. But as we'll get to, international adoption is actually just an extremely small tool in the toolkit that we can use to address the issue of vulnerable children in the world. And so what we really wanted to focus on are more ways that people can help vulnerable children. And what I will tell you right now is this is a little bit less sermon, actually not a little bit less, a lot less sermon and a lot more TED talk. So please bear with me. So this is something where I want to say I am coming with the presupposition that the people listening to me are two things, Christians who want to help. So if I hope that if you're not there, that you're at least open to listening, but those are my presuppositions as I'm talking to you today. So my background, this actually is going to tell you how our family got to where we got to. My background's all classical music. I used to be an opera singer in New York. I always say that like I'm confessing, but I love classical music. And I moved back here to teach at a university, and I was singing with the Columbus Symphony. And then I took a church job, and they wanted me to start a band, which seemed ridiculous. And I started writing music for that band. And in a long story that I could tell you someday, but not today, we had a personal tragedy. I ended up making a worship album for someone I loved. And it did well on the radio, which was very surprising because we didn't send it to the radio. So all of a sudden, we were like, maybe we have a ministry we never thought of. I kind of chucked my jobs and went on the road. So I have been touring full time now for about almost 20 years, which makes me feel really old. And I speak and I sing. And so what was happening there was our family, our original five, had a lot of experience with disability. And so what we were realizing is as we had this platform to share with people, I really started getting passionate about helping children and children in need. And so that started in the disabilities community because we had a lot of experience ourselves there personally. But it spread out pretty quickly to vulnerable children. So we were looking at issues of poverty, issues of child trafficking, orphan care, family preservation, lots of things. And we got a lot of very interesting opportunities. And I remember one of the first things we did that really opened my eyes to this problem was we did a trip that started in the UK, and then we spent about a month in Kenya. And we were sent with a whole bunch of groups. We were there with MANA Worldwide and World Vision and BBFI, and just a whole lot of people had come together to do this tour. And so we got to see a lot of approaches to the problem, which was very interesting for me. I'm a pretty analytical person. So I got to see all these sort of approaches to this issue, and it really opened my eyes to the idea of vulnerable children in the world and what does that look like? And I'm not excluding the US, vulnerable children in our world, right? And so we were getting pretty passionate about this, and I felt like there was an issue, especially in America, where we really just don't see it. People ask me all the time, why did we choose to adopt? And I say, well, we didn't need more children. What we met a lot of orphans, and you realize there are children who need families. And so we were invited at one point to Thailand, and we were supposed to go for a couple weeks. And the idea was that I would write them a song so that they could use it to expand their ministry. And it was specifically to look at issues of child trafficking. And I remember like thinking, well, Thailand sounds cool, but boy, do I not want to do that. Like, there's nothing in me that wants to take that trip, because you know that you're going to come home from the trip knowing things that you wish you didn't know. Right. And we did. But as I prayed about it, I remember praying about it and really telling the Lord, I was like, I've got little kids at home. This is a pain to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to know these things. And just feeling like the Holy Spirit was saying to me, if my own people won't open their eyes and see it, then how am I to address it in the world if my body won't be willing to see it? And so we went, and it was a very hard trip. But one of the things that happened during that trip was that we were spending quite a bit of time in one particular orphanage that was up in Chiang Mai. And I don't know what you know about Thailand, but the minority peoples in Thailand are the hill tribe peoples. And they have no political standing. They are very poor. They live in very remote and pretty primitive situations out in the countryside. And lots of those kids get sold. And we'll talk about why. But this orphanage was rescuing children from trafficking and caring for them. And I met one little girl named Pim. She was 12 years old when I met her. And she was super musical. And someone had donated a guitar to the orphanage, and she had learned everything she could on that thing. And someone else had donated a keyboard, but no one at the orphanage knew how to use the keyboard. There's Pim with the guitar, and then two of the other girls that we were hanging out with. And someone had gifted a keyboard, and no one knew how to play it. And so when she realized I knew how to play it, she was like attached to me, glued to me. She was not going to let me leave before I told her everything about this keyboard, right? To the point where we left a huge sign on the wall with all the, you know, chord structures and stuff so they could figure it out. And we were sitting there one day, and she pulled out a songbook, and it was a worship book, and it was in Thai. And I don't want to look smarter than I am. I know no Thai, none, except I can say hello to you. But I started playing along. And she thought I was the smartest person on the planet. And she didn't recognize that the chord symbols do not change. So I just looked super smart. But it was a worship song. So I started singing it. And she looked so surprised. And she says to me, she says, Miss Jennifer, you're a Christian. Now you got to remember, she's 12. She grew up with her hill tribe language. She was sold to Bangkok. So she learned Thai in Bangkok. Then she was rescued about 2 years prior to this. She was rescued from trafficking and learned some English from some missionaries in her village. And so she's in her third language talking to me. She was so smart. And she says to me, Jennifer, Miss Jennifer, you're a Christian. And I said, yeah, I am. And she said, I'm a Christian. And I said, you're a Christian, Pim. And at the time, Thailand was 97% Buddhist. I said, Pim, how is it that you have become a Christian? And she said, something that to me was so profound, it was so simple because she's translating it, right? But I never forgot it. She said to me, I have seen what Buddha calls love, and I've seen what Jesus calls love. Jesus' love is different because it's real. And I thought, well, how is she seeing Jesus' love? She saw Jesus' love because the people came and rescued her. She saw it through the people who were now housing her, sending her to school, feeding her, the people who were telling her that she had value, the people who were telling her that her past did not have to define her future. And when we came home, that was the first time in my life that I really considered adoption. And I wanted to adopt him, and we did try. And at the time, U.S. citizens could not adopt from Thailand. But also, Pim is in a weird category, and we're going to talk about this in a second too. But she is not, she is orphaned, but she's not. She's what we would call an effective orphan. She had living parents, but they were incarcerated and not available to her. And so here is a child who, in many countries, cannot be freed for adoption because she has living parents, but she cannot be adopted either. And so we kept track of her through her orphanage. We have gotten to see, I'm still Facebook friends with her. She sends me messages. And I'm happy to tell you she's doing great. She is a young mother. She is married. She's a hairdresser now. She's doing awesome. But that was the first time that I thought, you know, maybe we could be more to somebody. So what I want to talk about for just a minute is why on Adoption Sunday am I talking so much about like poverty and trafficking? Well, I wanted to think about vulnerable children. When you look at who is vulnerable in the world, it all goes back to poverty. Who's being orphaned? People in poverty. I mean, and I'm talking very broadly. Obviously, there are going to be exceptions to everything, right? Who's being trafficked? People in poverty. If you are a family and your parent has HIV and your medication is $1 a day, but your family makes $40 a month, if we live here, $1 a day to stay alive, that seems like a very smart choice, right? If you're there, you're not getting your medication. And then we have another orphan, right? So this, the intersection of poverty is so profound when we look at that idea of vulnerable children that you really can't ignore it. That is the single like baseline factor for what's going to put a kid at risk. So let's look at a few. I brought a few stats that we're going to put up real quick. This may be surprising to people, but just about 11% of the world right now, 692 million people globally, earn less than $2.15 per day per person. Okay, so that's per person. Now, I am a Compassion International artist. I've been with them for years and years and years. We serve the bottom 2% of income for the world. The bottom 2% of income for the world means that your family collectively, all together, if you pooled your money for your family, you're making less than $1.80 a day. So you can imagine some of the situations we've been in when there are families trying to support themselves on less than $1.80 a day, and maybe they have two or four or eight children, right? UNICEF, okay, if you look at the numbers for global orphans, you're going to get a number anywhere between 142 and 153 million in the world. The problem with that number is it's really nuanced. There's so many definitions of orphans. So I'm going to tell you that number reflects a definition where you have lost a parent to death, not both. If we look at a double parent death situation, then we're looking more in the 20 million range. But UNICEF and many, many, many organizations would tell you that the number one indicator of risk for a child is to lose one or more parents to death. And so that's where that number is coming from. There are also 20 million kids right now in the world who are what we call waiting children. That means they're ready to be adopted. They are paper ready. They are waiting. And this is an official class of children. When we adopted our children, this is what we adopted out of. Why are they waiting? You know, if you talk to people who maybe are dealing with infertility and they're trying to adopt and they're talking about these long, long wait lists, all of those wait lists are for babies. People are waiting for babies. Children who are waiting because they're hard to place. There's three main reasons they might be hard to place. One is that they're part of a sibling set because it's really hard to place multiple children if they want to keep them together, and they should keep them together. The other two reasons, which are the most prominent reasons, are your age or your medical status. If you are over about the age of four, I mean, four is sort of the drop dead age. If you're over four, your chance of being adopted is just statistically, it's about zero. And if you have medical needs, it's very, very low. There are 12 million more children orphaned every year. And if you are doing math And you're thinking, how can we have 150-ish million orphans worldwide, but 12 million more every year? I'm not going to go into that because it's too sad. But that just tells you something about the life expectancy of this population, because this is an incredibly vulnerable population. And another child would be orphaned due to AIDS every 14 seconds. Now, I will tell you, I personally, having been in the field looking at people dealing with this issue, this is unconscionable. AIDS medication is cheap, right? And it works now, right? So this should never be happening, right? That should never be happening. And then just because I wanted to give some stats for domestic as well, there are 355,000-ish children currently in the U.S. foster care system. That's as of last year's numbers, with approximately a third of them currently available for adoption. Most of those kids are going to be older, harder to place, waiting children. Now, the reason I say international adoption is such a small tool in our arsenal is because last year, total Hague and non-Hague international adoption from every country in the world to the U.S., total was 1,275 adoptions. People are shocked it's that low. 20 years ago, it was at nearly 22,000, right? Why? And I will tell you, that's all U.S. policy. They brought in a new person to run international adoption about, what, Nathan, 12 years ago. And the person that's running the adoption agency doesn't want kids to be adopted. And they don't want to pay for them. That's just the kids who are coming in often have medical needs. They don't want to pay for them. So this is why I'm saying it's not really a viable option. And I go to many churches and I hear people say, let's just adopt them all. Well, that would be awesome. Let's go do that. But no one is doing that. So what can we do that might also help as we take all of our tools to sort of chisel away at this problem? It has to be a multi-layered approach. And that is why I want to say this is not the normal message about adoption, but in our family, we consider ourselves Plan C. Okay, so we're going to talk about that. Plan A would be family preservation. Family preservation. How do we keep kids with their families of origin? Because a lot of people have this very simplistic, I mean, I have weird conversations at my tables after shows, guys. I mean, I'll have people who will literally suggest that we bring an entire country here because they'd be better off. And you're like, better losing their whole culture, losing everything. What? Why? Why would they be better? You know, like, it's just a funny thing that people have in their head. No, people need to stay with their families of origin if they can. They can't always, but many of them can. If your parent needs vocational training so that they can afford to feed you, they should get vocational training so they can afford to feed you. If they need medication so they can stay alive, they should get medication so they can stay alive. Because this is by far, statistically, by far the best possible outcome for children is that they can stay with their family of origin. I have met so many kids in orphanages who are there because their parents cannot feed them. And that is not an adoption issue. That is a poverty issue. And we as the church need to be standing up for these families and trying to preserve these families. That's Plan A. Plan B is maybe you don't have parents that can care for you adequately, or maybe you just don't have parents. Well, then the next best thing would be to stay in your culture, to get adopted in your home country, to stay in your culture and not lose so much. That would be Plan B. Now, unfortunately, as we look around the world, every country is so complicated. I'm just not even going to get into it. It's so complicated. But every culture has different reasons kids come into care, different reasons that maybe the adoption isn't a great option or it's more or less in other countries. It's very different. But many, many countries do not have pro-adoption policies. So that is another area. If you're a law person, we got all kinds of areas you can get involved with this issue, right? And then Plan C is international adoption. There are kids that have no other options, right? I am not the best. Hear me correctly. I'm so blessed that I get to be mom to my kids. I love them dearly. They're amazing. They would hate that I just said that out loud to you, but they are. They're awesome. And they lost so much. However, Is it better than an institution? It is. There, that's my pat on the back. I am better than an institution. But it is better, right? But how do we attack this problem before we even get there? Because many, many kids could be helped before we get there. So, as I said, I've worked for years and years with Compassion International. I'm going to share a little bit more about them later. We are going to give you a few options of next steps that you can take right here today at Sanctuary that we're involved with that specifically go to family preservation. But in my situation, I've worked with Compassion for years and years, and their tagline is releasing children from poverty in Jesus' name. They are doing exactly what I'm talking about with family preservation. Now, they call it releasing from poverty, but what it is releasing children from that burden so that their families are preserved. If you sponsor a child through Compassion, you're getting them education, medical care, they're learning about Jesus. It's all through the local church. It's like amazing how they really mobilize and empower the local church. They call them frontline churches, churches in those actual neighborhoods where these kids live, to be the church, right? And it's holistic. So if you sponsor a child and their parent needs vocational training, they get it. If you sponsor a child and their parent needs medication, they get it. Actually, it's health insurance for the entire family. The whole family can get medical care through that. It's very holistic. And so I want to just share one place that we were recently and show you how this can impact a community. Nathan and I, this past summer, we were with Compassion in Dominican Republic. And it was a fantastic trip, even though it was surface of the sun hot. I did not look cute, but we were there, and it was amazing because Compassion's been around about 70 years, right? And has actually been studied. The University of San Francisco did an enormous academic study on them and showed that they were the most effective system for releasing people from poverty of any of the systems, which is pretty cool. And so we were there and looking at several communities, and one that we were in was this urban community called Walé. Walé is in Santo Domingo. And it is a very rough community. I was talking to a pastor who had been there 30 years. And when he came in 30 years ago as a very young pastor, he was telling me that their neighborhood, just his neighborhood where the church was, and I'm talking about like we walked the whole thing, took about 20 minutes, had three police stations because the amount of drug trafficking, gang-related deaths, violence. It was a very scary place to be. And he said, as he came in as the new pastor, all these children started showing up to his door and they're saying, "Pastor, can you feed us?" And he's saying, "You can picture what my salary was as the pastor living off gifts from a community where pretty much everyone in this community is making less than $2 a day, right?" He had no money. And he said, "You talk about being a man of God who feels called to help, and you're looking at literally hundreds of children showing up every week, and I can't feed them." And then Compassion came in. Compassion's been in this community for 20 years. They power it through the local church. So they set up a child development center at the church. They don't even brand themselves there. The people in the community just see the church. And they see the church, and they know, "This is a place we can go. The kids go, they go for school, they get their medical care there. The parents can come get medical care there. They get fed there and they bring the food home if the family needs more food." It's pretty amazing. And now, 20 years later, they share a police station with four neighborhoods. And when the pastor came in, he said he felt like the Holy Spirit really was saying to him, "You claim this city for me." And so this is what they drew on all the walls. If you walk around Walé, this is on walls everywhere. It's tagged everywhere. It says, "Jesus Christ is the King and Lord of Walé." And on the side, it says, "City of God." I think that's, I can't see it because I'm old, but it gets smaller. Yeah, Walé is the City of God. Is that what it says? Yeah. This is tagged on all the walls. And it is shocking. We're walking around with this pastor in this neighborhood now, and literally still we have houses that are built out of trash, but everywhere he goes, everyone is yelling, "Pastor," and they're fist bumping him. He knows the name of every single child. I want to show you, here's the staff, or part of them. This is some of the staff at the Child Development Center. The guy in the middle in yellow is the old pastor. He was adorable and not as active. And then the lady in the brown dress in the front, right behind her, hiding behind her, is the pastor that was walking through fist bumping all of the kiddos. And I just want to show you their center. This is their cafeteria area. So this is where the kids are coming to be fed and go to school. And they just did an alumni interview, which is alumni are the kids who finished the program and went through, because we keep the kids through high school. And this is the stats that they got. It's going to be small, so I'll read the relevant stats. But kids who finished this, and this was just done, I think, last year, they said respondents, 97% of kids who went through this program said they were released from poverty. That means not, because this isn't just feeding people. This is trying to help them change their life. 93% said it changed their lives. 95% said that they felt hope as an adult because of the program. 92% said that it allowed them to provide a better future for their own children. So it's got ripple effects. So I didn't want to show her picture because she felt private about it, but this is how this intersects with family preservation. We had one family that we visited. It was a mom. It was a single mom. She had two teenage children. She was, I think she was 27, and her kids were 15 and 13. And then she found herself pregnant with twins. And she said her plan was to get rid of them because there was no way. She said, I can't take care of the children I have. There's no way. And she got into the Compassion Infant Survival Program, which is a program that they do now to help get prenatal, postnatal care for the mamas. And also to they do all this parental training. They do a lot of things to get them, vaccines and correct nutrition and clean water. So many of our communities just need clean water. And they helped her with housing and training. She learned to be a seamstress. And it's amazing. We went and visited her, and she has all of her kids with her. And she says, I got to keep my children. This is what I'm talking about. That woman would be the number one person on the front lines of losing their children and having another statistic. And those twins who were adorable would have lost their mother and their culture and maybe grow up institutionalized or maybe not grow up. Right. And so that's what I'm talking about when I talk about family preservation. So I just want to give you just a few quick ideas about adoption, because this is Adoption Sunday. And because someone handed me a mic, as a mom who is an adoptive mom and travels a lot, there are a few misconceptions or weirdnesses that come up over and over and over about adoption that I just want to say really quick. Maybe if you are not adoptive parent, this would help you think about this topic as you're talking to people. One is there's a weird obsession in the church with how adoption is this simplistic thing and it's a beautiful thing and our kids should be so grateful. Well, I will tell you, as mom, boy, do I want my kids to be thankful. I want them to be thankful. But my kids are like, every time someone tells them they need to be grateful. And this is me talking to a lot of adult adoptees. They're like, why does everybody else get to just have parents, but I got to be grateful that I get parents? Why does everybody else get to just have parents, but I have to be super thankful that someone would deign to raise me? Kind of a thing, right? It's a painful thing to say to someone. So maybe don't say that to them. And the other thing that I want to say is it's never mean-spirited. It's never ill-intended, but it is such a privileged position to be speaking from. Right. So that was one. And that's just, you're letting me vent a little. Two, we should not be looking for children for families. We should be looking for families for children. Everything about adoption, I know that can be painful, especially if you're someone who really wants to parent and can't parent. And that is a super valid reason to adopt. And also, this should be child-focused. This should be about the child, what's best for the child. We need to always have that child-first perspective. The third is just the number of people who say they're going to love the heck out of their kids and that that's going to be enough. Love is awesome. You should love your kids. But I just want to say this population, is coming from trauma. There's legitimately no adoption possible without trauma. That's not possible. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I mean, like, hard things are beautiful, right? But it's not possible to not have trauma. And so safety trumps love every day. No one can feel loved until they feel safe. So I just want to say, if you're a foster parent, if you're an adoptive parent, like, become the most predictable, boring person on the planet. Never have an unexpected move. Have your house be the most predictable, boring house, not in a bad way, right? But like, nothing unexpected should ever happen there, right? Because your kids need to feel safe. And once they feel safe, they can feel loved. And then the last thing I wanted to just say is culture is so important. Culture is so important. If we're going to adopt across cultures or across races or across ethnicities, if we're going to do that, we darn well better know something about that. We better celebrate that. A lot of kids have lost a lot. Many adoptees don't have really basic information. Some of them do not have birth parent information. Some of them don't even know their birthday. They don't know a lot. And there's big holes in identity when you live that way. So the things that you do have that are identity, like your culture, you better celebrate that. You better hold that up. When our kids were adopted, they were school aged. If you get adopted somewhere, say you're an American child and you go somewhere and they say, we don't do Christmas and we've never heard of pizza. You're going to be like, what now? That is awfully sad, right? So when my kids came here, actually, we have a kid's book about learning to make Noah's favorite food because he was entirely terrified that he would never have it again, right? And he's like, this white lady's nice, but hamburgers, come on now, right? Like, he was like, give me a break. And we do all the Chinese holidays. We go to Chinese school. Why? Because I don't want them to lose their language, right? And I can't tell you how many adult adoptees I've talked to who tell me that their number one sadness is that they lost their first language. I mean, I hear that continuously. And parents say, well, they'll just adjust. They're in our family now. Well, they are in your family now. And now your family includes that culture. And it should, right? So I'm just going to conclude by saying adoption is a big ask. I really hope, I will talk to you all day about adoption out there. I will not go home until you want me to go home. It's a big ask, and it isn't for everybody. I hope some people will consider it. And yet, there are so many ways. Like, I don't want anyone to be here and be like, well, that's not my calling. And so check. I have no involvement in this issue, right? Everyone can help vulnerable children. We're going to give you several ways that you can help vulnerable children today. And there's so many more. Everyone can help with this problem. You can come alongside families. You can involve yourself in family preservation. And I want to say, what might you be missing by not taking action? I know when we adopted, we were very scared. We had some scary medical situations going on in the middle of that. And yet now when I look at my kids, like, my fears are different, right? Like, what if I had missed them? I could have said no because I was too afraid or too going with the flow or too lazy or whatever it might have been. I could have said no and I would have missed them. What are you possibly missing by not answering a call that the Lord might have on your life?